Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside, just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Yesterday, I had an experience, Andrew, and I'll give it to you quickly. I'm watching the Champions League and I'm thinking, this is rubbish. Like, there's nothing happening here. Not really. I thought for a while Leipzig were going to do something. We'll talk about it. We got a great show coming up, by the way. I hate to start on this note. But I immediately on my phone, the notification for Stick to Football with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer pops up. And I'm like, I'm not enjoying this part of football, but I can't wait to listen to that. Do you know what I mean? Like it just seems there's so much of it around us now, and you can be a football fan, I think,
and never watch a game.
Maybe.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of people feel that's a direction that sports are headed, where people are as interested in the culture around sports as they are in the actual playing of the games.
I don't know
if that's good or bad. I would tend to lean a little more towards that bad.
No, but there is so much good in football. There's so many enjoyable things. Like, you know, we often come in juiced on a Monday just about what we saw on the pitch. Definitely. But there's so much intrigue and culture and stuff going on around it.
It's why we can even do this. Like, for however much we love the sport, generally speaking, like, I don't know how much enough interesting things happen just on the field of play over the course of a couple of days that like can carry us to do like an hour and a half long show. Like not always, maybe not even usually, but enough, like there's enough other things in sports that make this all fun to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're enjoying that podcast, but people say don't talk about other people's podcasts.
Why?
I don't believe that. Just a couple of quick things. It's such a good chat that they have. It's unbelievable. And you can tell Keane and Neville and, you know, our ex-teammates and all. And but Solskjaer, he still seems haunted by everything that happened.
In some ways. The things that I found really interesting, boy, it was such an interesting glimpse behind the curtain of Manchester United and how they go about scouting players and bringing players in. For whatever we think about how like managers don't have say, Ole was like, yes, they're not the only voice, but Ole made it quite clear. If I didn't want a player, we didn't get that player. The only players that they signed were players that he wanted. Now everyone had to agree. There were players that he wanted that wound up not coming in, but they never signed anyone that he didn't want. He said, I wanted Ronaldo, and he was adamant all throughout. It was the right decision. It just didn't work out. Which is a weird statement that doesn't...
It's just such nonsense. That's him trying to protect himself against the backlash or protect himself against Ronaldo making comments about what went on. But like, I was sat here. Did I or did I not call it?
It's one of the If you and I ranked the things for each of us that we've been most right about over the years, that one is on your list.
Yeah, but I felt it was so obvious, and I honestly think in his heart of hearts he doesn't mean that. If he had to do it again, it wasn't the right thing. He wouldn't have signed him. Of course he would.
Probably not.
And then having telling United about Haaland, like a lot of what Ollie did was in lieu of having a proper recruitment system and a proper director of football, and having Haaland, you know, basically being able to get a straight line to Haaland and to tell United that, well, we can get this guy for 20 million, you have to get him for 20 million. And United were like, no.
So can we use that as a jumping off point into today's show where we talk
definitely
some Champions League? So you're talking about Haaland and Ole's comments. So we may as well just take that really quickly and go to Manchester City and FC Copenhagen. City win on the day 3-1, 6-2 on aggregate. Nothing really to see here. I mean, it was pretty standard. It was over quickly. Akanji had an amazing volley early in the game, and then a terrible mistake from Copenhagen's goalkeeper just a couple minutes later, 10 minutes in. They're two down. And
I turned off at that point.
That was it. Yeah. But Haaland did score later in the game. I mean, just such a Haaland goal. Two defenders on him. Great touch. Great finish. What a player. And it made me think about Ole's interview where he spoke about Haaland, because I think that Haaland, in some ways, maybe I'm just speaking for me personally.
Right.
He's a little bit misunderstood. And by that, I mean, I have this image of Erling Haaland, like we've spoken about on this show, that he is some kind of football Frankenstein monster who is a machine built to score goals. And that's why he has no personality. He's not human. He's just this thing. And the way Ole talks about him is like, I need to stop thinking about that. Like, yes, physically he may be that way, but Ole, when they asked him about him and his relationship and how well he knows him, I mean, he went out of his way to not even really talk about the footballing side of Haaland. He emphasized what a great guy, such a good person in the locker room, such a great teammate, doesn't care about scoring the goals. If there's an easier pass to be made for someone else to score, he doesn't care. He makes the pass. I thought that stuff was actually really interesting, and it humanized Haaland in a way that for many people, because of the style in which Haaland plays and because of how we think of him as some kind of monster, inhuman monster, the way Solskjaer talking about Haaland, the person, I actually thought was really interesting. Kind of made me almost look at Haaland differently. Like, oh, he is a person. How about that? And a good one.
I do think as well, because Haaland had a kind of a reputation that came out of like maybe what were seen as sarcastic or snappy interviews, or he was very kind of, what is it, taciturn the word? I don't know. He was kind of blunt. And I do think it's a cultural thing as well. You know, he's not going to James Madison yet. You're not going to get that from him. And I think that kind of colors our perception. And then you see how clinical he is on the field. Oh. And you put what you perceive to be dullness off the field and, you know, a precision on the field. You put it together, you come up with a machine. When it's probably, yeah, he's precise on the field. He's deadly on the field. There's also probably some cultural or nationalistic characteristics at play there as well. And also English not being his first language, albeit a language most Norwegians I've ever met have been very comfortable with. Sure. So I think that is part of it. Not to talk about Man United when we should be talking about City, but like there was nothing to talk about in this game. It doesn't follow, by the way, either that Haaland goes to Man United, goes on, is brilliant. Bellingham goes to Man United, goes on, is brilliant, like they both are now. That doesn't follow. There was a developmental point between Birmingham City and Real Madrid for Bellingham, and that was Borussia Dortmund, who churned these quality players out, these young players. And the Bundesliga and Dortmund in particular seems like a bloody good place to go if you're a young player wanting to develop. Look at Jadon Sancho. Jadon Sancho's best years probably of his career are behind him, and we're at Borussia Dortmund. He goes to United that didn't have a structure for him and doesn't work out. So there's development, there's structure, there's a scaffolding that needs to be there to bring young players forward. And for us to think, oh, you missed out on Haaland. Holland would have been walking into a dysfunctional club at Manchester United. Now we've discovered the levels of the dysfunction. I mean, would he have been good? Yeah, but he probably would have been really good and then had to be sold on because, yeah, he would agitate to leave that mess. It's just...
We'll never know. It's hard to know. Don't know. Some guys are so gifted that, like... I mean, look, Haaland was doing this at Salzburg, like before he set foot at Dortmund.
I think Bellingham's a better example then. You know, there was a reason they passed on United. And there was a reason they had the foresight because they'd seen what happened before to go to Dortmund. So yeah, look, it's hard to know. All I do know is that Manchester City 3, FC Copenhagen 1, it did not feel like a Champions League knockout game.
It did not. It really didn't. I felt the same way. The crowd, Akanji scored the goal and like there were cheers, but it was not. It had almost like a friendly vibe. Like
it did have a friendly vibe.
And the opponent does play into that. No offense to Copenhagen. What an achievement. They've been fun. They were amazing in the group stage. But like Man City's fans are not, they're just not getting up for that game.
I mean, they don't get up for a lot of stuff lately. Like, and particularly nights in Europe, they've never been 100%.
We'll see who they draw next. There's a good chance it'll be, I mean, it's mostly big clubs left. So I think the quarterfinals will start to bring us a little bit more in the way of drama.
I haven't watched what I've seen. I think Manchester City are... It will be one of those that Pep looks back on with... I mean, they should absolutely walk away with this Champions League. Walk away with it. And if they don't, it'll go down as one of Pep's great failures. Walk. They should cruise this Champions League.
Cruise. I don't know if I...
Tony Cruz it.
Well, I think they're one of the teams that stand in the way. We'll get to them in a sec.
I mean, they'd want to get their house in order considering the way they played.
Let's talk about that. Real Madrid and RB Leipzig, it ends 2-1 on aggregate. And, you know, something that you and I were talking about, I'm going to kind of go off on a little bit of a tangent before we get into the game, but it's not often since the rule was changed that I've thought consciously during a game about the absence of the away goals rule. But this was one where I did find myself thinking about it.
You didn't get your big swing.
Well, because the big swing wouldn't have come because Madrid scored first and then Leipzig scored just 3 minutes later.
But jeopardy Madrid playing immediately.
But that's the thing. The big swing didn't come, but there would have been this tension for the last 25 minutes of that game because of how poorly Madrid were playing and because Leipzig were getting chances. I mean, they hit the crossbar in like the 93rd minute of the game. You know, that would have been it. Like that would have sent Madrid out. So there would have been this underlying tension all throughout that didn't exist without that having been there. I'm not saying that I miss the away goals rule. I think we have had drama without it. Think about Real Madrid a couple of years ago and how dramatic their run was. That the away goals rule was gone at that point. But it just got me thinking as to why the rule was eliminated. This is from Diario AS back when the rule went away. UEFA President Alexander Seferin pointed out how the away goals tiebreaker ran, quote, counter to its original purpose, adding that it discouraged teams from playing attacking football. It dissuades home teams, especially in first legs, from attacking because they fear conceding a goal that would give their opponents a crucial advantage, Seferin said. There's also criticism of the unfairness, especially in extra time, of obliging the home team to score twice when the away team has scored. This reasoning led to the motion being carried that the away goals rule went away, yada, yada, yada. I think I would have been okay with it staying, but I do agree about the extra time thing. I always found that a little bit like that. See, that would kill games too. Like we say, oh, the drama of the away goals rule. Well, if the away team scored an extra time, it's like, well, the drama's gone. They won now. There's no coming back from that. So I do see both sides of it. I don't know. Has it helped getting rid of it? The last two Champions League knockout stages would tell you not really. It's been kind of void of drama, but that could just be a coincidence. I don't know. But this was the first time I really thought about it because I was like, well, these last 25 minutes would be so tense with how poorly Madrid look.
Yeah.
And that was really the story of this. Real Madrid go through without having played well at all over the course of 180 minutes in either of these games. They had two good moments. We said our analysis of the first game was, Well, this is what happens when you've got gifted players where you can play pretty poorly for 90 minutes, but Brahim Diaz comes off the bench and has one unbelievable moment in the second leg. Madrid were booed off the field in the first half. They had a 0.09 XG in the first half. They were booed off the field. And Carlo Ancelotti agreed with it. He said afterwards, at the beginning, we were not good. We showed little intensity, little energy. I may have made a mistake in the lineup. When criticism is deserved, you have to accept it. Today, it is totally deserved. The whistles are deserved. They woke us up. It is necessary to have a demanding public. JJ, this is what Antonio Rudiger, here was his press conference after the game.
We suffered a lot. And they played well and we played bad. Simple.
These are comments from the winning team, Ancelotti and Rudiger. They won the game. I guess this is what can happen when you have players of this skill. The Bellingham, Vinicius's run was great on the goal, and Bellingham's pass was even better.
Bellingham's pass is, I feel like you don't see that kind of slanted through ball very often.
Oh, the vision was so smart.
It was the vision, the execution, everything was just so clever about that goal. You have to wonder if Openda had taken either of the two shots. Now, there was the volley was the third of his chances in the first half. I'll give him a pass on that as a tougher one. But if he'd taken either of the ones where he's in on the left-hand side and he tries to bend them around the goalkeeper, either of those and we got a tie. It was really down to Leipzig's inability to take those chances that were presented to them.
100%. I felt bad for Openda in specifically because he's good. He's a good player. He's 24. Yeah. He's got 17 goals this season. He had over 20 last year in Liga, and he had chances. The door was open for them to do this, and they couldn't walk through it.
And it's funny, it was Willy Orban that scored the goal for them. Your center back. So, very strange, kind of game. And as well, I'm not saying that the atmosphere was bad at the Bernabeu, but again, when you watched it, it was like, didn't feel it just. Didn't have that edge. There's something missing.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, they played like crap. Like, it's hard. It is also harder for fans to really get into a game when the team looks so lifeless. But
yeah, it's true.
They won. On they go. One of the teams that did not look lifeless, that knew the task ahead of them and went out, achieved it, Bayern Munich. They turn around the 1-0 defeat from the first leg. They knock Lazio out 3-1 on aggregate. This was a great Harry Kane game. Two goals for him. And it got me wondering a little bit. I forgot to mention this. There was a pod a few weeks ago when Bayern lost to Leverkusen that one of our listeners, I think it was Kyle Logue, tweeted me. He's also a Spurs fan, and he asked if I'm taking enjoyment in this, because I think there are definitely Tottenham fans out there, I think, that are kind of liking, in some weird way, seeing Kane go somewhere else and still not win. With that in mind, I kind of wonder, like, is this a legacy moment for him here? Because they're not going to win the league, it looks like. And that will reflect, fair or not, and I'll go through some of it, that will reflect on him in some way. He was their big signing. Is the Champions League kind of, his eggs are all in this basket now?
I mean, legacy is such a big word. I'm going to say his legacy would only be on the line were it the case that he underperformed at Bayern. Like, it's that's how I'd see it. And then what he did in terms of goal scoring at Tottenham would be under review. And how we view him as an elite striker would be tarnished after a poor time at Munich. But none of that's happened. 6 goals, 3 assists in 8 Champions League matches, 27 goals in 24 matches in the Bundesliga. He's been brilliant for them.
Incredible.
Absolutely
brilliant.
And it is a weird and irritating and comedic cosmic quirk that they are probably not going to win the Bundesliga when he joins them, a man desperate for a trophy. What's on the line here is him being able to say, I won the Champions League, the biggest competition in the world, when he finishes his career. That's what's on the line. He would have had to be poor for Munich. Instead, he's been great in what you could argue at times has been a very poor Bayern Munich team. So
yeah, I agree.
Legacy not tarnished.
I agree with all that. And there is this kind of thing out there that he doesn't come up big in big games. I don't know where that, well, I shouldn't say I don't know where it comes from. He was bad in the Champions League final. He was also hurt.
I think the missed penalty against France.
But that thought on him existed well before that happened.
Did it? Okay.
I mean, I don't know. To me, it's just not true. It's this narrative on him that is false. And maybe I've just watched him closer because I'm a fan of his and the team that he spent his career playing for. But like, I mean, he's got 14 North London. Like, who decides what is and isn't a big game? I guess is part of this too. Like, is it only cup finals? Like, the North London Derby is always pretty big. He's got 14 goals. No player has scored more North London Derby goals than he has. The best game I ever saw him play was at Man City under Conte. Is that not a big game in the year that they had the Nick Bye to finish fourth? You know, in the Champions League, yeah, he didn't play in the semifinal against Ajax or the second leg against Man City. Scored in the round of 16 against Dortmund. Had the assist on Lucas Moura's goal against Barcelona. I don't know. I mean, the Champions League, those games are big games inherently. They just are. He has 27 Champions League goals in 40 appearances. Luis Suarez, one of the greatest goal scorers of his era, also has 27 Champions League goals in 73 appearances. I mean, like, you know,
I guess the problem is for the last few years at Tottenham, he wasn't really in the kind of games that people are focusing or would call massive games. You said the North London Derby. Okay. But it's again, no more than what's happening with Munich this season is not his fault. It's a measure of where the team's at. It's a measure of where Tottenham were at. Look at all the goals he scored in his final season at Tottenham when they were just, you know, they were just nowhere.
30 goals.
Yeah. So no, I don't buy that legacy stuff.
I would agree. I would happen to agree. Finally, PSG, another one of the big boys, little trouble with Real Sociedad.
Can I just rewind one quick second? Oh. Because it's not like Munich were unbelievable themselves. You know, they were good. They won the game. Immobile had a chance that was...
Yeah.
Look, I've no faith in him as a striker. You're talking about big games. It's him. When I see him or Belotti come off the bench for Italy, I'm like, no, there's no danger of this guy scoring. It just isn't. Which is ridiculous considering their numbers in Serie A. They're fantastic. But I'm giving Immobile a pass because it skims off the Lick's head there, and I think that was a big part of it. I just wanted to ram that in there.
Immobile's ball was still in the air long enough for a good striker to adjust.
You're watching on the replays, friend. That absolutely spun off his head. It came so quickly. I'm going to give him a pass because I'm so harsh on him and his
that miss was horrible.
Okay. All right. Okay.
That was a horrible miss.
Okay.
Trying to be nice. So Bayern go through. PSG also going through. Not much trouble with Real Sociedad. Advanced to the quarterfinals. So PSG, I guess this year, now have made it farther than they did in either of the last 2 years with Messi and Neymar. Read into that however you wish. Another ridiculous Mbappe game.
I mean, the first goal was so good. Like the two feints to create the angle and then to whip off a shot like that as powerful. Did you see in the replay that it ripped part of the rigging off the net?
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah. I think he's the best. I was going to say he's the best player in the world. I could just stop there. I could just say he's the best player in the world, but specifically in creating his own shot.
He's on the end line.
There's no reason he should have been able to get into the position that he got to, but the way he uses his body, the way he's able to fake shots that send defenders flying and still remain in such great control of possession, and then his accuracy. I mean, he knows exactly where he wants to go. The CBS crew did a great breakdown of his second goal where he goes near post.
So that to me, I didn't see that. That to me is his trademark goal where he fakes to open out like Henri and go to the far side and then drags into the corner.
And it was cool to see Henri do the breakdown of it. Thierry Henry explained. I think it's probably on their, they post a lot of stuff on their YouTube page. It's worth checking out Henry. He does a whole breakdown of the way Mbappe opens his shoulders to force the goalkeeper into thinking I'm doing this and then go near, immediately shift his body and go back near post before the keeper can adjust. But they asked Henry, they're like, well, if this is so effective, you never did this. Why did you always go across the face of goal like that. And he basically was like, well, that was my specialty. Like I was perfection. I perfected doing that.
Oh, so he did.
But he's also like, he talked about how he enjoyed the goalkeeper knowing what he was going to do and still knowing I'm going to beat you. Like there was a joy that he took from that, that everyone knew what he was going to do and they still couldn't stop him from doing it.
I feel the way Mbappe has perfected that finish is actually much more economical, much more efficient finish than Henri's. Because with Henri's, a lot of the time, it's not just the passing with the inside of the foot motion. You're whipping it as well a little bit to take it around the keeper and inside the post. Mbappe may have found the cheat code. That's not a cheat code because not everyone is going to be able to do it. But I can't wait for the first goalkeeper to go, I'm not diving to my left. I'm going to stay here and dive and cover this post. And I suppose it's, you're screwed either way. If you go and cover that post, even come, you know, half step, two steps to the near post, you open up a massive gap.
I think if you do what Mbappe does and it fails, I think that's worse than going across the face of goal and having them save it, because there's a good chance if you go across the face of goal, the rebound will probably be right out front. So if you have anyone for your team in the vicinity, they'll tuck it home. If Mbappe goes near post and doesn't score, it's either going out for a corner kick or it's just kind of back cleared into the corner.
You're so right. And there's way more of a, I'm really overthinking this now. There's way more of a chance with what Mbappe does that you drag your shot completely wide and everyone just looks at you. Oh, what a... There's way more of a chance of that.
But he's too good. So like, you don't, well, it's almost like you don't factor that into the calculation because he's just not going to do that.
We're talking about me, old arthritic knees, Devani, and you, old ham legs, Gundling. So there's just no chance of this being a problem.
Yeah. So there you go. That's a portion of the round of 16 done and dusted in the Champions League. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead. We'll take a break. There's so much to do on the other side that we have not even had a chance to tease yet, JJ. There's...
I know. Waffling we've been.
Yeah, there are some... Something I didn't even put on the rundown that I just saw this morning that I wanted to play for you that has to do with the U.S. men's national team. Obviously, there's what went down in San Diego late Wednesday night. With the U.S. women in Canada, there we have a lot to discuss on that, and we have a new segment to debut as well. So we'll get into all of those things in just a moment here on the show. But before that, JJ, I do want to remind everybody, of course, that this program is brought to you by the good people at Manscaped, and I want to say top of the morning to you.
No.
This episode is brought to you by the St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers, Manscaped. Yeah, this year, don't just.
Nobody says top of the morning.
I actually say it every morning when I wake up, and I'm not even Irish. It's part of my lexicon.
No, they don't. We're going to practice just quickly. Don't say top of the morning. Say something else. Say, I'll give you some examples. Well, how's it going? Say that.
My brain won't allow me to say anything other than top of the morning.
Well, what's the crack? How are you getting on? How are you fixed? Anything. Nobody says top of the morning. That is a Yank invention.
Well, let me know what else they don't say here, because Manscaped wants to let you know that this year, don't just chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun with the leaders and below the kilt hair.
Finish that yourself.
I didn't write this. Say goodbye to your clover. To your clover forest with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped, including the two of us. Head over to manscaped.com, use code CAUGHTOFFSIDE for 20% off and free shipping. And of course, JJ, ever since we've used Manscaped, we can proudly say that we have found our pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Meet your new lucky charm for St. Patrick's Day, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer comes, of course, with two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, which is so incredibly important. Skin-safe technology, God love it. It's also equipped with the dual LED spotlight, so you can get a nice clean shave. You can see every ounce of what's going on there to make sure you don't miss a spot. As they say here, the people at Manscaped tell you, you can navigate your shamrock patch in peace. It comes with, of course, in a compact case, so it makes travel with it very, very simple as well. Whether you're sculpting your beard, because it also comes, of course, with the Beard Hedger Pro Kit, which is amazing.
Thank God for it.
You and I both swear by that as well. So many elements of the the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra and Manscaped's whole kit. So get 20% off and free shipping with code CAUGHTOFFSIDE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code CAUGHTOFFSIDE at manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make sure your little hairy leprechaun is luckier than ever. Manscaped.
Look, right? I am all in on the Manscaped and the Manscaped family of products. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're part of the Manscaped family since we started shaving our junk. I'm not happy with this. This leans into stereotypes. At least they didn't say anything about being drunk, you know?
Wow. The fact that you went there says a lot about you.
Yeah. But no mention of our great poets. How can we not have W.B. Yeats interspersed into an advert about shaving your pubes?
It's a great point. No, you're right. They were really derelict in their duties.
James Joyce, you know? It's just...
Yeah, no, it's inexcusable. I don't get it either. I'll tell you what, we still have so much more...
Make sure you don't shave the head off your pint.
Oh, that's pretty good, actually. All right. You jump in. You do these.
Do we have another one to do?
Within this show?
No, within the month.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, let me do the next one because this is... My grandfather and my grandparents are rolling in their graves listening to this.
They might be proud.
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, you're probably right. More caught offside.
And Shamrock.
Still to come.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Oh, back now. Caught offside. JJ, I wanted to mention this to you. So 2 days ago, the four managers of the national teams taking part in the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals, they all gathered for a press conference. That's coming up in 2 weeks, by the way. We got to start wrapping our minds around that. That's a big event. It. Yeah. So the U.S. are going to obviously face Jamaica in the first semifinal. And here was what Jamaica's manager, Heimir Hallgrimsson, here was him talking. He was being asked about his team.
How close are you, do you think, of that breakthrough win that Jamaica has been looking for?
2 weeks.
What do you think? Is that... He's smiling as he says it, and you can't see it in the you obviously are all hearing this. He was asked a question. He looked at his watch, then looked at Bearhalter, and then said 2 weeks. Is that playful fun, or is that bulletin board material?
Playful fun, I think. It was saucy though, wasn't it?
That'd be going right up on my bulletin board if I was in that U.S. men's national team
you
media
take
relations
everything
department.
You take everything as an insult.
Right on up there. Yeah. Bang. Make sure every guy sees it. Two weeks, they said.
It sauces this thing up. I like it. We can talk. And what have we been saying for the last while? Why would Jamaica be afraid of anyone in this region anymore? They've got enough to be dangerous.
Well, they got to show
better
it.
Than dangerous. They do have to show it. They do have to put it together. But there's been, I think there's been long a disparity between the quality or level that the players they have play at and what they produce regularly in CONCACAF. I just feel they've got more going for them And with Canada's, like, there's that second seat. If there's a top table, it was the US and Canada in the last round of qualifying for the World Cup. And,
well, Mexico finished ahead of the US, didn't they? Didn't the US finish third? It was all neck and neck. But
I know. But there felt like there was a definite decline from.
It's just that the US keep beating Mexico. So I think it gives the impression that the US are ahead of them, which I believe they are. But yeah.
But I just think, like, why? I see no reason why they couldn't cause an upset, cause problems. I mean, that's not the most controversial thing that Hal Grimson has said in the last week or so. The Athletic were reporting that he said he would love to have Mason Greenwood playing for his side and confirmed he has spoken to the Manchester United forward about a switch. The Athletic reported in October that Jamaican Football Federation was open to the idea of Greenwood representing the Caribbean nation, which he's eligible to play for via his father, Andrew. I don't really like to talk about what if, but this, of course, has come to our mind, Hal Grimson told The Athletic at a CONCACAF Nations League preview event in Dallas on Tuesday. I would like to have him in my team, like all coaches. I would like to have the best players in our team, but it's always up to the player himself if he wants to do it.
Interesting.
Now, we don't need to go past the problems that there would be with that, but I shows it's an indication of Hal Grimson's thoughts and about bolstering this team and making it better. But anyway, besides that, on the face of it, look, I think it was maybe. I don't see it as a shot across the bow. Why would you do that? The guy's sitting right beside you. I think it was playful. You've taken it to heart.
Two weeks, he says.
It's fun. It's funny. I think it's a good one. And listen, I'd be worried if I was Bearhalter anyway. Losing to Jamaica in the semi-final of the Nations League would be bad.
It would be very bad.
And they're a dangerous opponent.
Right. It could happen. And if it does, it will be much worse for Greg than just if they win, it will be, well, you're supposed to. What's like, this can only be, nothing good can really come from this game.
Greg is struggling to stay. The problem for Bearhalter is in many ways he can't win. Like, he's come back now for like what we call his second stint. And he has a lot of US fans on his back. He just does. Mm-hmm. That didn't want him reappointed, that wanted the US to go in a different direction. And so he's constantly proving himself. It's amazing to think, but he's this long in the job and he has to constantly prove himself. And this is a potential banana skin.
Yeah. Let's see. We'll get to the US women in just a moment after that insane game against Canada in the W Gold Cup semifinals. Before that, though, JJ, we got an email
that you
brought to my attention.
Very irate.
I've got to say, in all the years we've been doing this podcast, maybe it speaks a little bit to how most people do enjoy us. And even when they want to get on us about something, it's usually fair or whatever. This is probably one of the angriest emails I think we've gotten that I can remember.
A guy called Guy was very upset. I'll just give you some of the highlights. He was upset with the way we started the podcast last week. Arsenal, by the way, trounced Sheffield United. Looked fantastic.
We made it clear that we were recording before that game began,
and that's why we weren't. With that, like, if Arsenal fans were mad, like, I thought we were being playful and funny. So he said, well, if you're mad, you referred to
their fans as brats.
not all their fans, but definitely some of them. And I mean,
I think it bothered Guy.
Oh, it bothered Guy big time. So he's like, enough is enough. Y'all need to just entirely omit Arsenal from your show. I guess you got some emails from Arsenal supporters you didn't like in the past. And now every Arsenal supporter that listens to your show and contributes to your pocket.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. Like, you're not... No,
not much in our pockets.
There's not much in our pocket, buddy. Yeah. I wish your sunny outlook of what's in our pocket matched my accountant's, but go on. He has to sit through a section that should be titled Arsenal Abuse at the beginning of each show. You're picking fights with the supporters, then labeling the supporter sensitive and whiny. Think about what it's like to be a normal listener and hear that every single show now. You all need to grow up, boys. Arsenal are good. You will both survive. I'm actually kind of glad they're good. In the meantime, find someone to talk and leave Arsenal alone for a while. Just pretend they don't exist, because you all can't handle the enormous burden of intelligently discussing the clubs that aren't Spurs or Liverpool. Ooh, that's saucy.
This is someone who has made a decision.
Yeah, he's made a decision.
And what we say doesn't actually matter.
But, oh, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't matter the fact that Andrew has been called. Andrew.
I was defending Arsenal when Eddie Nketiah was their striker, all right? I have made myself look foolish to defend Arsenal.
Thought it was playful. I called Chelsea
They scored 5 goals in 7 games, and we questioned, okay, do they need a striker? Then they scored, 25 goals in 7 games. And so we said, okay, well, let's talk about which one are they closer to. We have been fair with them.
Let's try and take Guy on his merits. And he took our playfulness at the start of the last pod as just another example of us bashing Arsenal.
By the way, even that, after you said, you know, they've been bratty, not to call you out or whatever, but you were obviously joking. Even I said, yeah, but every fan base is like that. Like, we've been fair.
Exactly.
This guy wants to hear only what he wants to hear. He's made a decision on the Spurs fan and the Liverpool fan.
Yeah, of course he has. And 100%. Of course he has. And look, that's disappointing. I also said, we talked about Arsenal being in the wilderness for 10 years and now they're back. And I said, take a look at me now. Remember, I wasn't being funny. They are back and they're a brilliant. What did I say? I even said they were a big club in the middle of it. Like, I'm not.
They are a big club.
They're a massive club. A massive club with great, great history and a club I enjoy watching right now.
Can't speak into. We had Arsblog on the show a few weeks ago.
I know.
Give me a break, man. Like,
I know.
So with
but
all
people,
this,
with all this, what happened?
With all of this in mind, it's funny because we want to debut a new.
So
segment
mad now, though.
Well, I know we want to debut a new segment, and the other thing I should say, I don't know if he thought. Remember when Loser 33 said that, you know, even when Arsenal score goals, so we did a segment based on that, but that was tongue in cheek. They scored
playful.
6 goals. We obviously knew that those 6 goals were legitimate, and Loser33 tweeted us back and he had a laugh at it.
By the way, Arsenal fans like that. And he is the only person to have got upset with the segment the other day.
Yeah.
So he's on his own, but we are here to hear.
Yes.
We heard you.
And we are here to grow as well. And so it's not to say that I didn't take some of his email to heart. Now, the irony is I disagree with him saying that we're unfair to Arsenal. I think that he's being kind of a fanboy and is choosing to hear what he wants to hear. But it got me thinking a little bit about how we do approach certain clubs. So, JJ, I want to debut a new segment on the show today. And I want to do it genuinely. This is not joking around. It's not tongue in cheek. It's called Only Nice Things.
Snowdrops and daffodils, butterflies and bees, sailboats and fishermen.
Only nice things.
Wishing well.
JJ, when I came up with the idea for this segment, you demanded we use that song. What in the hell is this?
it's Dana, an Irish singer, and it's the song All Kinds of Everything, which is like puppy dogs, whistle bells, sunshine and clouds, you know, all these, all nice things. That's why it popped in my head. It's from the 1970 Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah, because I said I wanted to do a segment called Only Nice Things. You at first didn't want to do it. Then I explained it to you. You said, fine, but we have to use this. It's like you couldn't wait to somehow work this song into the show.
It's just a song like it's hypnotic. And from our childhood, it was always played, even though I was born years after they won that Eurovision. Like, this woman's song was played. Hun, hun, and whistle bell, dears and... puppy dogs, Christmas cake, you know that. all this, just a litany of all kinds of everything remind me of you. Anyway, yeah, so, Dana went on to be a reactionary Catholic right-wing politician.
So there's a happy ending to the story. but the point of all this is to say that I do believe, the irony is I don't think Arsenal fit into this, but I do believe that there are probably fans of a couple clubs in particular this season that could have sent that email that Guy sent.
Sure.
We're going to do this segment now where we're going to identify two teams and we are going to say only nice things about them, because it's kind of been too long, I feel like, since we have, and I don't want to turn off more fans. Again, Arsenal wouldn't have been one of the teams I would have included here. I think we have talked about them in a normal way, but
I bloody love Arsenal.
Okay. But that's besides the point. So there are two fan bases that I'm sure we have pissed off with negative tones and comments. And so we're going to say only nice things about them. JJ, okay. The first one here is going to be Chelsea.
Okay.
Only nice things.
I think that we've gone in on them, and rightfully so. They have obviously underachieved for much of the season. So now we're going to say only nice things about them. And here are a couple of the things that I have identified. I actually did not find this all that difficult, which is a good sign, I think, if you're a Chelsea fan, that it wasn't that hard to find these things. The first one being, for whatever frustrations fans have with this manager in Pochettino, I don't think the players have quit on him. And I think that's a good sign about the team and their backbone. I saw this from Cole Palmer when he was kind of asked about Pochettino, and he said, I feel like you guys, the media, don't see it every day on the training pitch, what we do. On a Saturday, if we don't get a result, then it's all Chelsea this, Chelsea that, which I understand because obviously football can be like that. But I think what we're building, the fans will see what we're doing. The manager has said to us, and the players are not stupid, we see every day what fans say and stuff. So he said, stick together. You believe in us. The players believe in the manager as well, and eventually we'll see it. I think they're still in on him, and hearing him say that, it made me think back to early Pochettino at Spurs. And it's interesting, people might forget this, but Tottenham finished with five fewer points in Pochettino's first season than they did the year before under AVB and Sherwood. But it was more about what was going on and fighting through the growing pains and establishing a new way of playing. Now, at times, it's been harder to see that at Chelsea because they've had so many stop starts with injury problems and because expectations are just generally higher for them. But if the players are seeing it behind the scenes and still believe in it, that's a good thing. They're 11th in the table, but they're 6th in XG. They have players who are not afraid to take on defenders. They've got the third most successful take-ons leading to a shot. They're bottom half of the table, but you know what makes them different than every other bottom half team? They actually have a positive goal difference. They do create chances. They have the 5th best XG differential in the league at +9. So when I see that, when I see all those things, there's a lot of words that you could use to sum up their season. One of them, when I see that kind of XG difference at +9, but being 11th in the table, one of the primary words for their season is unlucky. They do generate chances. They've just been unlucky. And Nkunku getting hurt has affected them. But like, I feel like there maybe is more there, and it wouldn't shock me if you believe like I do that luck is somewhat of a factor here in how the season has gone. That does not always transfer from season to season. So it wouldn't shock me if next year there is a bounce back up the table for this team.
I would co-sign on that. We were saying only nice things. The only thing I would add is I would emphasize Cole Palmer. I think that's a player, a real talent, who we were skeptical about at first because it was such an amount of money to bring him in for so few senior appearances. He's proven me wrong. He's proven a lot of people wrong. And I think he's the kind of talent, attacking talent, that you can build a club around. And having him definitely is something that can bolster Chelsea's fans' expectations for next season. So I'm completely with you on all areas there.
Okay, there you go. Next one now. JJ, I'm sure this fan base, they knew that this was coming. The second this segment debuted, they're waiting. It's Manchester United.
Only nice things.
So this one is this one actually is very personal, this Manchester United one, because I have an apology to make right at the end of it.
Oh,
a proper apology to a real fan, and some of my behavior has not been good lately. This is You'll recognize this behavioral trait in me, Andrew. But I will apologize for it. Look, Manchester United, there's great reasons for optimism. A, because they're Manchester United. They are a massive club with the kind of revenue where a rebuild, a turnaround can be done. And now they have the Glazers, not gone, they aren't gone, but they are moved away from the football operation. They've got Sir Big Jim Ratcliffe in there, along with the brains trust of Enyas, and they're going to definitely attempt to apply best practice to this football team. There is a positivity there at the boardroom level. This isn't a signings issue. This isn't a, oh, well, we brought in this player. They're not papering over the cracks. They're genuinely addressing the structural issues at the club. I can't say for sure that it's going to be successful. I can't say that. I can't go that far.
Careful, we're saying only nice things here.
Only nice things. But there is certainly reason for optimism there. The kind of dysfunction we talked about earlier on the podcast, that is being addressed. That has not been addressed. It's just been a papering over the cracks for years. The pursuit of Sancho, the pursuit of players like Amrabat, Casemiro, Ronaldo, all those kind of players, that kind of stuff, if they do the things that we can expect them to do to be a proper football operation, that kind of stuff should stop. The second part of this is an apology. Now, you know, I have a friend, I mentioned her on the podcast before, big Manchester United friend, Lauren. I have not been kind, I will put it this way. She's a huge United fan. She's always watching the games. And lately, I will, when United have a misfortune or something goes wrong, I will text her, whoever the opposition is, and I will say, for example, the Aston Villa game, when Villa equalized at Villa Park, I went, text her, go on, Villa. Come on, Villa.
Oh, that is, you're one of those guys that do things like that?
I used to be. And I didn't with her, because the one thing, we used to talk about Manchester United like in a rational manner. She complained about them. You know, we discussed them like normal football fans.
Right.
And now, of late, I've started doing stuff like that. Just like picking at her.
Actually, I knew that you had that. And you did that to me early in our relationship. On my Eagles trip.
I promised I'd put it behind me. So Andrew goes off to Washington for his annual Eagles road trip. And the Eagles lose by a missed field goal, is it, at the end?
Mark Sanchez got intercepted, and we wound up, it eliminated us from being able to go to the playoffs. It was one of the worst games I've ever been to.
So right on the whistle, I this could have finished us. I text you, how's your Eagles road trip now?
I couldn't believe it. I almost threw my phone into the Potomac.
Yeah. So she called me on it at the weekend. She literally texted me and said that I have to stop going to prick mode about Manchester United.
All right.
And those words are strong. That's a strong sentence. And so I'm resolving yet again after doing it to you. And like, even like Darcy, I used to do it to her too. Like I when Tottenham would go 1-0 down, I go, no, it was different what I did to her. When there was a chance for the opposition, I say, that's a goal. Like right before it had happened.
It's so obnoxious.
It really is. So anyways, that's
all right. Personal growth,
an apology, and I believe only nice things for Manchester United in the future.
Yeah, I would agree with the things you said there, except to your friend Lauren. I've never done anything mean to her. But about like things happening in the boardroom there, like, look, the first step in fixing a problem is understanding that there is one. And so it seems like new ownership has acknowledged that. Like you've heard Big Sir Jim repeatedly say, we've got to get back to emphasizing football. I think the hiring of Omar Barada, I don't know that fixes everything, but I would see it as an early good sign that they understand the work that needs to be done. Also, too, like you mentioned Cole Palmer for Chelsea. You know, I think United can start to identify some of those within their own ranks, too. Garnacho has his development's been positive this year. Look, Rasmus Højlund, it took him a minute, but until he got hurt, he had 7 goals in his previous 6 games. You know, Kobbie Mainoo is another one. And hell, I can't believe I'm saying this because of how his season started, but JJ, Andre Onana has shown me something. in the way he's responded to what was a horrifying start at the club. Third most clean sheets in the league, a good post shot XG minus goals allowed. He's near the top of the list in that. And by the way, in the Champions League, we know this isn't true, but in the Premier League, statistically, he does not have an error leading to a goal this season. So he's done well, I'd say. He talked about, I saw an interview with him where he said like he had a mental turning point. It was hard. He admitted it was hard for him to adjust when he moved to Manchester and he knew he wasn't playing well. And he said he's had a turning point and he has played better. So I give him credit too. So can there you
play
go.
That, can you play that demented drop again?
Nice things remind me of you.
There you go. Only nice things.
Yeah.
Only nice things.
No, it doesn't mean that those
life is about growth.
Yeah, it doesn't mean those things are going to happen. By the way, I can't do this every week.
But I felt
I have to be able to rip on a team.
No, and I what I will say to Guy is, again, while I may not entirely agree with his thoughts that we do that regarding Arsenal, he may not be like he may be speaking on behalf of other fans that do feel that way. And I felt if a United fan or a Chelsea fan had sent that email, I probably would have been more accepting of it. And so I thought, you know what, if I take anything away from Guy, it's that, you know what, maybe there is some truth in the way some of our we've approached certain teams, and let's try to be better.
This is so 80s sitcom finish.
La la la.
La la la. You know, maybe Guy was right. I looked within myself and I found a new me, a better me.
La la la. Only nice things.
Ah, so there you go. And now, but I know you, and I know now that you've kind of done that, you're going to come back, like, you feel probably filthy now. And so next week, you're going to come back with such vengeance against Manchester United or whatever. And
oh, my God. My relapse is going to be epic.
Yeah. So there you go. I hope Chelsea fans and United fans specifically enjoyed that. And I should say what Arsenal did the other day was absurd. Like, I'm not hiding from that. It was... They're on some kind of run right now. Like we've said, it's a three-team title race. I don't know. I don't want to keep banging this drum. They're insane right now. They're on form. They're the best team in the league right now. Like I don't. Anyway, this wasn't supposed to be about them. So moving on. JJ, the CONCACAF W Gold Cup, U.S. Women and Canada. In an all-time, in a classic last night, but I don't know if it was for the right reasons. 2-2, and then the U.S. go on and win 3-1 on penalties. But that is only, it's a huge part of the story. But my God, what an absolutely ridiculous game of soccer this was. Watching this game, it made me think more about my opinion from the other day when we were talking about Real Salt Lake and LAFC and that match taking place. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm okay with it. Was I wrong? Now, I do think what happened last night was way worse, but if the basis for that opinion is if me saying last night shouldn't have happened because of how dramatically it affected the way the game was played, that was kind of true in the Real Salt Lake LAFC game as well. So if you feel that for one game, I wonder if you kind of have to feel it for both. Although I'm going off on a tangent there.
Like I was reminded of England versus Poland or Poland versus England a few years ago. Remember, it got called off and the referee went out and the test was to throw the ball and the ball wouldn't bounce and it wouldn't go, you know, it wouldn't go any distance.
Yeah.
But the Polish field was probably on the same level as what the US and Canada played on last night. Exactly
that
way.
That was crazy.
It was insanity. The only thing I would say was that whatever drainage system they have at Snapdragon Stadium seemed to kick in the second half, or just maybe.
Well, no, all halftime was spent with a team of people squeegeeing water off the field. They were doing it manually.
Yeah.
It was still terrible.
It was bad. Honestly, I don't think the game should have started. It shouldn't have started.
But
it did. And it was, I mean, you can't say it wasn't fun.
No, it was very fun. But like the other question though, that I have with it is like, should a regular season game be handled differently than a cup semifinal? Like, this is a semifinal of a cup.
And so you just have to
Like the stakes are just higher. And so for it to be turned into something like that, like you didn't learn anything about either team last night.
No, nothing.
Do we know that the better team won? I mean, it's the same conditions for both, but like, I don't know if it's, were the U.S. better than Canada? Like,
I mean, what we can say about the football was, I know it's pretty much an assist from the pitch, but Shaw's first goal, the finish is brilliant.
Sure.
Considering that she dinks it, she clips it, and it still has enough to go in. Because there was every chance I thought that was just going to slop on the line and stay there on the line. The Canadian equalizer was superb.
Mm-hmm.
It was great cross, great header from Huytema. Smith's goal was a lovely finish. And who would have put down at the start of the game that Rose Lavelle would be winning headers against centre-backs, flick-ons. That was a nice goal and a nice finish. We have to talk about Alyssa Nair because she turns out to be the hero in the end with three penalty saves. All the same side, all the same height, almost identical.
Incredible.
Incredible. But the equalizer goal in extra time, I mean, it's something we've spoken about. It's such a penalty. She absolutely cleans Gilles out of the way. Like, just goes through her. It's completely reckless. I'm wondering if she should have been sent off for it.
Oh, whoa. Oh, my.
I mean, she's going for the ball, but that doesn't matter. It's without due care for other people on the field. Oh, my God. It was horrifying. And she nearly hurt herself, hurt herself in the collision. And I definitely think one of the Canadian players was trying to indicate to the referee, you know, a yellow here is... It's only part of it. Anyway, it was a great penalty by Leon, who would then miss one. Why didn't she just do the same thing she did in the first penalty?
Well, maybe she was in her head.
Yeah, because she played at perfect height. And I don't want to detract from Alyssa Nair. She took a super penalty herself.
Yeah.
And she made three saves. That's a great performance. But the Canadian penalties were, as someone predicted, I would say on Twitter, not good, not good. Crazy game. Utterly crazy.
Insane. Insane game. JJ, it reached a point. So Jeff Carlisle at halftime, he tweeted this, which I thought was funny. He said, I suspect this is what Twyla Kilgore's halftime talk will consist of. One, anyone playing a ground pass in our defensive third will be subbed immediately. Two, for God's sake, don't dribble. Three, safety first, defending at all times. If the USWNT does these three things, they'll win.
It's so hard to do any of that in the water, though.
But the like first says, one. No, no, no. Don't, the first don't... one, though. I mean, that to the point where... I mean, look, it's how Jaden Shaw, it's how she scored her goal, that Canadian back pass. Like, it made no sense, though. That started to get to the point of where, like, my Panenka treatment, if you do a Panenka, you're out, whether you score or not. Anybody attempting a pass back to the keeper, I would have yanked him right on out of there.
Yeah. Twyla, you know what, she was better off? Smashing that straight ahead of her over the bar or out for a corner kick.
Yeah, but maybe she didn't know at that point. Now, I think that there's just certain football instincts, soccer instincts that these players have from years of playing. And like, even watching the game, like the U.S., there were moments where like a pass back to the keeper is what you do. And instead they were smashing it horizontally out of play over the line for a throw-in, and it would take me a minute each time to be like, wait, what? Why are you doing? Oh, that's right, you can't pass on this field. And like, it was crazy. You know, props to Shaw. That's now four goals for her in this tournament. She scored in each of her first four starts. You kind of witnessing the birth of the next U.S. superstar. This has really been fun to watch. Like you said, her awareness to pounce on that as quickly as she did, and the finish in those conditions over a keeper rushing at her on a wet field. It was, I mean, she's 19 years old. Like, this is really fun watching this happen right now. And then one of the other heroes I wanted to mention, look, Sophia Smith scoring that goal in extra time. That was a great goal and a great job, like you said, by Rose Lavelle to win a header against two players perfectly into Smith's path. But something that I enjoyed even more than that, the last time we really saw Sophia Smith for the U.S., it was her missing a decisive penalty at a World Cup. This game then in a semifinal of a wild game, a memorable, emotional, physically draining, exhausting game. This game then goes to penalties. And what happens? Twyla Kilgore to her credit, send Sophia Smith out there to take the very first one. What has happened in the past, that be damned. You are still someone that we believe in here. And she converts it. It was close, but it was perfect. It was into the side netting, just snuck between the keeper and the post. Then she scored. You could see that there was relief, I think, that it went in. And good for her. I just thought, like, she needed that to go in after having missed such a vital one. I thought that was – I was happy for her, and certainly happy for the team that they pulled that out, because – I mean, look, I don't know if winning a game like that in those conditions, I don't know if it tells you that a team is good or bad or whatever, but I do know games like that, I do think bond teams. Like, that's a shared experience, winning an insane game like that, that I think help teams grow and get closer together. You know, new players, veteran players, like, they all have that together, that they were a part of that last night. I hope they can finish the job now against Brazil. So, wild one last night. Don't know what it means in terms of how good the team is, but you'd rather win those than lose them. So props to them for having gotten it done. Crazy.
Yeah, insane. I still think no way I would have started that game.
Christina Uncle was really good all night as well. I was following her on Twitter. She was on Paramount talking about it. And it was funny. She was saying, like, yeah, technically it's the referee's decision. But she made it clear, like, that may be what it says in the law, the laws of the game. But in practical application, that is not how it goes. Somebody asked her on Twitter if the referee can stop the match. And she said they technically can. And by law, yes. In practice, the match commissioner approves it. If you take that decision alone as a referee without their green light at this kind of event, the competition won't be happy. Lord. So, like, we all got bosses, you know, the referee. Yeah.
Even a referee.
So she could.
Not the ultimate arbiter of everything.
And you saw she tried. She went over to the side and rolled the ball and, like, it didn't move. And the commissioner, I guess, who was standing there said, play on. And so, all right, well, on we go. Insane game. Insane game, but fun for those who were able to stay up till the end to see how it finished. It was crazy. JJ, I don't have much else except to remind everyone that this Sunday, I mean, you talk about a couple massive games in the Premier League. Sunday morning, the battle for fourth could go a long way in being determined as Villa host Spurs. And then the big one after that, Liverpool hosting Manchester City. Jurgen Klopp's last match hosting City at Anfield. I'm sure it will be highly emotional. It will be hugely important. This is one of the must-see games, of course, this season.
It's been for the past almost a decade, it's been the most watched game in the Premier League, and occasionally it's failed to live up to standard, but more often than not, it's been utterly compelling. And
I mean, there is a chance for some of the all time fart smelling that you've ever seen could go on at 90 minutes, in this
especially
one.
With Klopp going.
Yes,
and Pep is going to be effusive in his praise. It could get rough. It could get rough for all of us.
All of us. Are you going to be okay?
No, I'll be fine. Be fine. My nerves is what'll. Playing City in this era is like, wow. I'm going to be super nervous. I'm nervous already.
Klopp has had more success against Pep than anyone else. However,
Andrew, it's not like we're going in with a completely even hand here into this game.
Salah is expected to be back, right?
But yeah. But you're like, okay, he's back. But what state is he back in? How far back is he? We don't know. And he's, there's variables here, and we have to see how Liverpool can deal with them. City were able to rest players for the game against Copenhagen. That's the difference. Liverpool are playing right now in Prague against Sparta Praha.
Well, so, the big winner here could be Arsenal, because they have Brentford this weekend. So they're probably, I would imagine, what would they be rooting for? A draw? And then they play City in 2 weeks. So, after the international break. So 3 weeks. Four, I don't know. I can't do math. Two, like their next Premier League game.
Honestly, it's not a title decider at the weekend, but it's an important game for sure.
Yes, absolutely. That is true. Vital, vitally important weekend. And we'll be back, of course, early next week to relive all of it. JJ, this was a wonderful podcast. I feel like we grew. It was nice to say only nice things about a couple clubs that maybe we haven't had the opportunity to do that much over the course of the season. Our thanks to Guy for inspiring it. And my thanks to you, JJ. I enjoyed this immensely. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.